Okay. Oh, Anonymous Kiwi is looking at Hi, It Is a Podcast. And hello, it is a podcast. This is episode 26 of the Foam News Collective podcast. What's up, y'all? Thanks for tuning in. Today is Wednesday, January 24th. This will be releasing on Saturday, January 27th on streaming platforms. That is actually my birthday.
Happy early birthday.
Happy early birthday, unless you're listening to this.
Yeah, then it's on happy the day of release. KT.
Or if you're listening to it on YouTube on the day of release, you're late for my birthday. Yeah, and it's
make sure you guys go to the Discord and wish KT a happy birthday.
A lot of pings.
I will be playing a show with my band, so actually not until later in the day. So anyway. But yeah, if anything happens between the 24th and the 27th and we don't talk about it, that's why. It's physically impossible. We are here with me and Vile. We don't have Grim. We have Grim back on the show, but not back on the podcast yet. That is coming. But we do have a very special guest, Boomstick Mods.
Ayo.
Who would always be a very special guest just because he's a great person, but is extra special right now because he's our first guest presenter on the show. So welcome in, Boomstick Mods. How are you doing right now?
I'm doing well, doing well. It's going great. Very busy. Planning events is hard.
Yes. Yes. So I always say this, and I can't imagine there's anyone who listens to this podcast who doesn't know who you are, but we're going to pretend that there is. You are a YouTube creator. You've been making videos of a variety of types, gameplay videos, reviews, builds of particularly 3D printed blasters. I know is sort of your focus, and you're a key figure in the Maryland Foam Alliance cinematic universe. And if I have it right, Maryland Nerf Herders was the group you were most closely involved in, right? Although I know you were all kind of involved in everybody's
That is correct.
Business.
That is correct. Maryland Nerf Herders was cool. The group that I founded, which joined up with the Southern Maryland House of Nerf and D&V Nerfers, which became the Maryland Foam Alliance.
Yes, which I think is such a cool thing. I love that. Maryland Mayhem last year was so great, and I think that having sort of the power of multiple groups, plus of course the HVZ group at UMBC, was just made for such a wonderful event, and I'm so glad that y'all have made the gutsy move of making it permanent.
Oh yeah, would not be able to do.
Has it seemed beneficial so far?
Oh yes, it's been incredibly beneficial. Like, we help each other out a lot. Obviously, the heads of the groups have been working together for the past several years, I want to say, in just the admin capacity for each other's groups. And I think last year was the first year when we took steps into being more of an official one-headed group of three bodies, or one body with three heads, however you want to describe it. And it's only improved things for us, really. Obviously, it does require us to work together, which that can be difficult at times just because differing opinions and whatnot. But overall, I think the difference of opinions has allowed us to be better. Because I don't know about some of you, but I personally am a person who gets ideas and I try to run with them, and sometimes my ideas aren't great. And so I find it very helpful to have people tell me, hey, probably not a good idea. Let's think this through a bit first. Because I tend to get caught up in the excitement.
Sanity checks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is kind of a recurring theme on the podcast, too, is sort of talking about, I think that the hobby gets so much stronger when we have these sort of collaborative endeavors. That's what this show is. It was sort of a meeting of minds to try to disseminate information more effectively. We've talked to We talked early on to Maritime Foam about his collaboration with Foam Blasted when they were working on the Gauntlet, and then we talked with other Not Enough Nerf and Paper Skeletons about something kind of similar, and I think that all of these sort of like meeting of people who have their separate experiences makes what we do that much better. So I think that's really exciting that's coming through. And speaking of a meeting of minds, you're also a host of the Dart Jam podcast, which I've enjoyed for quite a while. Got started just a little bit before this podcast did, I think. I remember the first murmurings of it. And I know that y'all don't have a super consistent release schedule or anything. Like, it's kind of more topic-based, right? Like, you just kind of decide, well, we have, like, a thing we want to talk about, and so let's do an episode, and it's kind of like whoever on the crew is available. Is that kind of right? Am I catching the vibe?
Yeah, it's very much a, hey, somebody has an idea for a topic, who's available to talk about it, and then we attempt to schedule a time for all of us to be on.
Yeah.
Because we started off with trying to get all of us on at once, but we found that five people on a single podcast is a bit confusing. So we brought it down to like
it's hard
three or four of us to try and minimize the amount of confusion, because that was one of the big pieces of feedback we got, was when we had everyone on, it was very difficult to tell who was talking unless you were very familiar with that person's voice, which is why we have kind of brought it down a little bit. And also, like, we've got people from the East Coast and the West Coast, similar to you guys here. Actually, because I know Vile's West Coast and KT's East Coast. Mm-hmm. I was at East Coast as well. But we're also spread across. I think we've even got some overseas. Yeah. But it makes it difficult trying to find a time for all of us to record together, which is probably the biggest reason why we're so inconsistent with our uploading. We are still alive, in case you're wondering. We do have an episode that's supposed to be coming out whenever Spud finishes editing it, whenever that may be. That's the other thing, is we all kind of take turns editing, and none of us are particularly quick at editing podcasts.
I actually have to admit, this will be the second episode. I used to really detail edit this podcast. And I think partly because we're sort of limiting the number of people on the show, and also because we're just kind of getting better at running a show, I am way cutting down that editing. And it is a massive, massive relief. It still takes work. I still have to go in, make sure each, you know, everybody sounds appropriate together. And one of the things that I always do too is I kind of lightly pan the different people who are talking. And that too much, of course. And if someone's listening in a mono, they'll like lose somebody. But a little tiny bit, I think, really helps distinguish who's talking. But once you get to five people, you can't, it doesn't really work.
Yeah, hard to split five people between two earbuds.
Yeah, we've done a few five-person episodes. We had the episode with Dart Sweep and Nate from the World Foam Alliance, which was five. Was that, we had a six-person episode, didn't we?
That was Not Enough. Not Enough and Paper Skeletons. Enough, we had, yeah, because everybody was there for that one.
And, great episode. Absolute nightmare to wrangle.
I absolutely can understand that.
Yeah, not recommended. But yeah, thank you again so much for being our first guest host. Of course, we have an empty seat at the table for the time being, and I think this is the first time people will have seen us having an additional presenter, and we're scheduling out our presenters through the year, and I really appreciate you coming on and kind of being the guinea pig as we figure out the best way to communicate with someone who's sort of jumping into the team. We've now been doing this show over a full year, and that, or I guess actually exactly a year, because we started mid-month in 2023, and it's funny how many things you forget are just understood between teammates who've been working together for so long that you forget that you have to communicate to someone someone who's new, which in retrospect it's like, oh yeah, there's absolutely no reason you would know that we do this super obscure thing, or like all these little details. I'm very curious to know what the experience of putting the show has been like for you.
For me, it's been, honestly, I've been quite impressed with the way that you guys just run your podcasts in general. Sorry, I had to drop something and it made a sound.
It's all good.
I was a little confused at first, only because the way that Dart Jam podcasts run is very kind of off the cuff and not as planned out. Like, we'll have a very generic outline for, and obviously we don't do news episodes like you guys do, which are very planned out. But you guys communicated very well, like, what exactly you needed from me. It helps if I actually read all the instructions that you give me.
Well, that's something for the next person, is I'm going to actually have like a sheet written up. That's not just one chat message that gets buried in the next 15 minutes.
So, but overall, it's the way you guys have it set up, the way that you guys have a system in place. I'll call it intimidating at first, just because you guys kind of have a flow that you guys get into. Yeah. But I think you accommodated me very well for somebody who's not done your guys' system before with how you do your episodes. But you guys accommodated me well in explaining, hey, it might sound a little bit better if you do it this way. It might help if you do a little bit of this. Overall, I did not have a hard time. Once I understood what was expected and what you needed of me, or rather what I could do awesome. To be of use, rather. But yeah, no, I'm very, very much impressed with the system you guys have.
Cool. I really appreciate that. It comes together piecemeal. And I mean, you saw us making changes on the fly. There's a lot of that goes on. It was not until after Boomstick was sort of fully on board and working on the project that we came up with the name and the concept for Community Crosshairs. Mm-hmm. We had been trying to figure that out for a couple weeks. We'd been trying to figure it out since before we did the last Mod Spotlight. But you got hopped right on board, which I really appreciate. A lot of things that have stuck around and become permanent parts of the show kind of came up.
And I gotta say, I love the whole Community Crosshairs thing, because that allows you guys to show off more, obviously, because you're not limited to just one Mod Spotlight. It allows you to do more than just showing off mods. And when you said that idea, I'm like, that's awesome. I'm a big fan of Community Crosshairs, so I'm happy to be a part of the inaugural Community Crosshair.
For sure.
I really loved it, to be honest. The idea was nice, because you know, people like Brad from American Foam used to, at the end of his videos, a lot of times showcase other creators, small channels, small things that people were doing. And I like that as well. And you know, we ran into this issue a few times throughout, you know, last year, where sometimes we're looking for a mod spotlight and like we're down to the last minute trying to find something because nothing's out there. And you know, Jolt was having to like scour through Reddit posts and Instagram just to find something, because nobody even would post anything. And you know, that really starts to limit you on something, and you're having to just really go out of the way to try to find this. But with this, it really does open that door and it helps to showcase things. Cause again, it's really nice what Brad used to do for smaller creators, just showcasing them a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it's such a lovely way to expose more of the hobby and what people are doing. Cause sometimes it's not just building a blaster. Sometimes it could be community events or running things like, you know, like what you guys do with Maryland Mayhem and things. There are smaller venues and smaller clubs is a great opportunity to showcase them and see what interesting things they might be doing or fun locations or game types or something. It's really, really nice. And I love the idea.
And there's so many things that are so cool that people are doing that just aren't news stories. And this gives us an opportunity to cover those. I mean, the central stated goal of the Foam News Collective is to uplift creators in the community, right? Like that, like it's to disseminate information in an entertaining way and to give more exposure to people who are doing cool stuff in the community. So it feels so natural to have a segment that is just specifically doing that, and not locked into worrying about like what's news and what's exciting and what gets clicks or whatever. Like it's very pure. So cool. I'm really glad to have you on board with the first one of that. And speaking of recurring shows, I guess, and like showcasing, actually, no, this is perfect because Merge Masters is coming back and it is also showcasing the works of the community. And it's a modding sort of competition show. I know Boomstick, you know more about it, and Vile, you did the research on it. Why don't one of y'all take it away and kind of explain what's going on here and sort of how this return maybe might be different or build on the old version of the show?
Yeah, I mean, it's like I'm in Mr. Nathan's Discord, and we were talking about it a little bit. People have been wanting this integration competition to take place for a long time. The first three, like there was 2018 was the last one, if I remember correctly on the research. I didn't find anything after 2018.
When did it start?
Oh, it was I want to say it was 2017. I don't remember. Nathan said in his video that it was quarterly, but I don't know if it only happened, like, did it start in 2017 and end in 2018? I didn't really get through the full, like, exact dates of when they started. But the point of it was to bring in integration work and bring in these people who loved to do integration-type blasters. And that used to be a much more commonplace thing in the hobby years ago. Obviously, Boomstick, you stated that you've done integrations years ago, like, however many years ago it was. I don't know if you remember your last time you've done an integration.
It was years and years ago. Last completed integration? Because a couple years ago, I think I started an integration, but the last integration I completed was a double sledge fire, and that was years ago at this point. Yeah, I am not a good I'm not a merge master. I'm not good at integration. I've done it because I wanted to do something, and then 3D printing came along, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that instead.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's part of the problem is 3D printing came along, and it really overshadowed. It really just took over the space in the hobby, because back in the day, you know, integrations used to be sort of a means to an end, making the blaster that was perfect for you. And sometimes that could be increasing the length of it or increasing the size of it or adding an underslung barrel or a whole slew of different things. And now when 3D printing, it becomes so easy. A strifle kit is just a couple of 3D printed parts and, you know, a couple of cuts and you're done. And the whole point of what people used to do with integration work was there was a lot of ingenuity that had to come with it, whether it's through what type of bonding materials you were using, what kind of, you know, how you come up with your body lines on these parts. And we've seen that through even some of the mod spotlights and even this week in the community crosshairs, just how people can really just redesign a blaster almost from the ground up from something that they got off the shelf. And it's impressive. Because it's not just somebody's really good with spray painting or somebody just glued something to something else. It really kind of, it's such an exhibition of just how much skill and creativity goes into creating these one of a kind blasters. And we've been able to meet so many people that seem to just keep doing it regardless, even though, you know, they don't necessarily get the spotlight on them anymore. Those things aren't, you know, getting top votes on Reddit. They're not really hitting all of the Instagram posts or getting top, you know, views on YouTube like they used to, because, you know, everybody's looking for those really hot 3D printed blasters nowadays, since they just are, you just hit print, you put them together with hardware and it does whatever you want it to.
Yeah. I will say,
so I think this was a really fun one to see just finally coming back. It's nice to see that Mr. Nathan's taken charge of that one.
Oh yeah. And it's been nice. Cause I actually will say, there seems to have been, either I've just been noticing it more lately, or there has been an actual uptick in the amount of integration work I've been seeing online, or at least on Instagram alone. I feel like I've been seeing more and more integrations coming along, which I'm very happy to see, because while that's not something I'm particularly good at, I love seeing how people create these new things from different blaster parts, because it's essentially you have a puzzle with no pieces that actually go together. You have to force every single puzzle piece together, and you have no idea what the full picture is going to look like.
Yeah, it's organic. You sometimes, like, you might be building it and you go, you know what would go really good right here? This. And you just go and you dig through a pile of trash and you find that one part and you put it on there, and sometimes it doesn't look that good, and sometimes it's just like, I would have never thought of that. That's an amazing idea. And it's something that when you're around a lot of people that have that, like, if you're in that community of people that do that type of stuff, everybody's sort of piecing together and getting ideas and getting inspiration from one another. And it's nice that that community was still sort of, you know, it got tucked away for a little while, and it's been, you know, slowly working on stuff, and people, myself included, obviously, I've really started to get heavy into trying to do integrations, and I need to complete some of them, but you know, the sort of idea of what you can create that no one else has. I love the sort of individuality of whatever people build. It's so unique, and there's never any limit to where you can go with it. You can add 3D printing to it, actually, and that's also another really nice little thing. Even again, the one that we featured with Iron Gopher actually has a 3D printed heel cover on the grip that he integrated. Like, he actually combined it with the grip and sanded it down so you wouldn't see the printed lines. And, you know, it was just a way to make the grip look a lot nicer. There's nothing wrong with adding it. It's a supplementary piece that you can totally do. And it's nice to see again that there is sort of an uptick. And I think it's just the fact that so many people were doing it in this sort of little group, and that kept inspiring more that were just hanging out in the group to try their own and so on. And it's just been sort of flowering from there. And it's just, again, it's really nice to see a competition kind of come back and help these people sort of test their skill.
Oh yeah. It's funny you mentioned that.
Do we think that having a show like this come back will increase the quantity of this work that's being done? Do you think that's enough to inspire people who are not currently practicing this craft to really dig in and try?
Oh, absolutely. I think for a lot of people,
I wouldn't doubt it.
For a lot of people, the only thing they need to do to inspire, the only thing they need for inspiration is just seeing that this is a thing that they can do. To where some people might not even realize that integrations is as possible as it is, because they see the finished products or they see these work in progress and, like, they have no idea where to begin. Whereas with Merge Masters, you're bringing together kind of this whole community based around integrations, to where it's like, hey, this could be a good starting point to where I can join in with a bunch of other people also doing the same thing, and you essentially have this community within a community to where you're able to kind of have a good jumping off point.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. I would also say there's a nice thing about this is since there is almost a localized place, obviously Mr. Nathan's server is a great location, a great place to get information. If you don't know something, now there is a collection of individuals that can really give you the details of like, oh, this is how you do this. This is how you could combine this. This is because, you know, back in the day, people sometimes would just use, you know, two-part epoxies, but they're brittle. It causes cracks. It falls apart. You know, your paint has issues. And there is such a good wealth of knowledge now that's in a collected spot. You don't have to scour the internet. And people are there to answer questions fairly quickly, actually, for anybody who might be working on something. So again, you're starting to really knock down that entry, you know, that barrier that they had for entry in years before, where really we're just kind of cutting things up and trying to combine them back together, hoping for the best. Now there is a lot of information out there, and it's worth it, because if you see it and you see how solid some of these things are and you see how nice they are, you can say, wow, I had no idea. And that can be the jumping off point for somebody to try it.
And it's also
cool. Yeah. That kind of documentation and access to information is so important mm-hmm. for art forms like this to carry forward. What were you going to say, Boomstick?
I was going to say, it's also nice having it in, like, literally today in the modern day. I say modern day, but in 2024, you have the resources and stuff that's happening currently, instead of having to go back and look at perhaps previous years, to where looking up information and whatnot might be more difficult in finding the exact resources that you need, as opposed to having it happening now. It's much easier to get the information you might need. That was a horribly rambly statement. I apologize for that.
No, I get what you mean, though. I get what you mean, though. Yeah, for it to be current and active is very different than trying to just access archival stuff. Well, I'm looking forward to the effect that this might have on the modding community. I know that there was some impact even when we just had the mod spotlight. Which was very focused on the same kind of modifications. This is a much more robust, I think, thing for that. And honestly, when Merge Master starts to select winners, I imagine we're probably going to cover that.
I would.
Because we'll definitely want to show that stuff off as well. That said, there is one 3D printed blaster that I do want to take a second to talk about. There's a bunch of cool community releases this time around, but we have only so much time on the podcast, for a couple reasons I specifically want to talk about Tracer by
Chance.
Thank you. Yes, I was like, starts with a C, so I was trying to think like kuh sound. No, it's a CH. Anyway, Tracer by Chance, which is a flywheel pistol, which is a type of blaster that is very near and dear to my heart. I've always preferred running flywheel sidearms and little pistols. Like, it's just such a great, great feel. But we actually had some footage of Chance using it, which came from our very own Boomstick. So I know that you are one of few people who's gotten to see this blaster in action already. And I'm curious about your thoughts. I'm curious about how it seemed to handle, if you got to play with it at all, how it compares to some of the other flywheel pistols out there. Obviously, it's more like modular and flexible in design than like a Nightingale. Certainly than like, I have a concept pistol, which like when I built it was like one of the only options at the time for something like that. But the design of it is kind of limiting in a lot of ways. So yeah, I'm just really curious about your thoughts, having had a chance to interact with this blaster.
Well, I got to see it on the field at Sub-Zero this past, or I guess it's still January. I got to see it at Sub-Zero this year up in New York, and it was a really cool blaster to see. I did get to fire it a little bit. Chance literally handed it to me and just said, here, it's a Nightingale. So I was like, oh, okay, cool. I immediately know how that works. Semi-auto, flight wheel. Obviously, one of the big pros is the fact that you're not limited to Nightingale mags, which is, I know, one of the complaints people have with the Nightingale is the fact that you do have to use those mags. Now, while the Tracer is a bit bulkier, it also has a really nice toy aesthetic. I think I was telling Chance that if you print it in the right colors, you can make it look like the head of a duck.
That's so good. I think its chonkiness is one of its best features.
Yes, 100%.
I love that look so much. and I know that, you know, part of the reason it's so chonky is because it has a large battery tray, which lets you run just about any reasonable size battery on it, right?
Yeah, and that is one of the...
And flexibility to put different wheels and stuff in.
Yeah, and that's another one of those downsides of the Nightingale Tour. It's like if you're running to run it as a primary, especially for a longer event, say like an HVZ or something, the Nightingale has a rather small battery. And while it does last a decent amount, I think being able to have that larger battery makes it more reliable as a primary because you're not worrying about wearing that battery down as much, which is nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Well, I'm excited for this. I think it's cool that this popped out as like a full release. We see a lot of stuff come through. We go back and forth on our policy about releases that come out that are sort of like teases and people get really excited about it. Silly Butts has talked about this a few times where it's like a blaster gets announced and then like the hype dies off before the product actually comes out. And then it's hard to get people to like report on it and talk about it.
Yeah.
And so we would sort of like stay in touch and wait until there was actually like kits available to report on something. I like that this came out as a relatively complete, if you're comfortable sourcing some of the hardware, you can get good cages and wheels right now. And the files are available right now.
Yeah.
And there's a timeline for like complete kits. And I think that that's really good. And I think that I am always trying to convince creators and designers to A, learn how to photograph and video your design, make a friend who knows how, because this is a constant struggle. Is like, I'm trying to make a segment and there's like two grainy pictures and it's like a vertical video and like the blaster is never in the same place in the video. And it's like the coolest product you've ever seen, except you can't see it. It's like you being this hypothetical designer have poured hours and hours of your life into this amazing thing that you've created. And I know that you're tired and you just want to put it out in the world, but you have to take that extra step and make some good media around it. This one was pretty good. Tracer was pretty good. Your video was probably the best documentation of it. And there's some decent pictures, both from Super Stressed, who's one of the people producing them, and from Chance, which were easy to crop and kind of get around.
There's at least two pictures without somebody's hand in it.
Yes, that's true. And there were a couple pictures with some, because like one of the things is that it can use any Talon compatible magazine, and there were a couple pictures of different magazines in it. But the other thing is having a cohesive release plan. Figure out, once you've worked out with, who is planning on having kits, who is planning. And I know it's hard because if you're selling kits, you have to actually source all the parts. You don't necessarily know when they're going to show up, and then you need lead time to get the kits ready. But like, I think patience is part of it, just waiting. As a musician, we deal with this all the time. It's like we spend months and months recording music, and it's like, it's going to see the light of day in like six more months because we have to get it mastered, do all the art, make some videos and stuff, press the CDs, get them all in, then ship them to distributors. And it's like, you just have to accept that there's a gap gap in that time. And it really, I think there really is a benefit to being like, this exists. You can just buy it right now, as opposed to like, this exists. And then a million people asking, where can I get this? Where can I get this? Where can I get this? It's like it's like the seagulls in Finding Nemo. Mine.
Mm-hmm.
I will say it is easier with flywheel blasters to source a lot, because a lot of the hardware for flywheel blasters is fairly basic if you have a 3D printer, obviously.
Yeah.
It's mostly it's motors, wheels, screws, switches, wires, things yep. that a lot of modders already have. So it's not like right. a Springer, which requires like custom drilled bars and plungers and
yeah.
everything like that. But I do agree. I do agree.
Although, interestingly, flywheelers have been getting more specific, interestingly, because now we have wheels and we have micro wheels and we have so many different varieties of, like, a lot of designers are sort of specifying a narrower range of, not the tracer really, but like a lot, many designers are specifying sort of a narrower range of like wheels that they intend for their blaster to work with, or motors that they intend for their blaster to work with. And you know, it is all sort of cross compatible. Like you can, like if it takes the regular motor size, you can stuff whatever you want in there, but you won't necessarily be getting the performance that the blaster was designed to work with. But obviously you're right. Like it is generally much easier to put together a hardware kit for a flywheeler than it is for a Springer. And if you can solder, easier to put them together and have them just work, frankly.
It's interesting yeah. that you mentioned that, just because I've had to modify several different flywheel cage covers because they weren't designed to work with the band blaster wheels, which are slightly bigger than the standard size. And so I've had to go into yep. a couple of different blasters. It's like, all right, upload this to Tinkercad, cut away a little bit just so it stops rubbing on the wheels. But no, that's an excellent point. Yep. You make a good, excellent point there.
Yeah, we are getting more specialized, which is not a bad sign for the hobby overall. You know, it shows sort of a degree of a sort of higher resolution of concern for like the things that we're trying to achieve with specific blasters. But it also can make it harder for, you know, if you're a younger builder and you're trying to put together your first whatever, and you know, you have a very small stock of parts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a bazillion motors and wheels, but I may or may not have the right ones for XY blaster. Whatever, you know, it's a balancing act. It's a balancing act.
Yeah.
I'm excited for this thing. I'm excited that it takes such a wide variety of different options. I definitely want to build one at some point, or maybe just buy one. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, it's definitely my aesthetic, among other things. So that's pretty sweet. A little bit less my aesthetic is some of the new stuff that Nerf has coming out, and we got a great run of leaks from Chickenmaster99, who gives us these great target scans. That was a previous episode, and this time these aren't really leaks per se. They're just sort of early postings, but leaks is a very clickable title. But Utter Travesty often finds us these early listings that usually don't have images. And these sort of expand upon what we already saw in the previous round. And the more of a picture we get sort of where the Nerf line, these are all Nerf brand ones, whereas the previous set had X-Shot and Dart Zone stuff as well. The more we get of this, I guess I'm just trying to figure out where they're going. So let's start with the pro products. We have this $60. Okay, so this actually counteracts something that Vile mm-hmm. and Al the Geek and I concluded in the last podcast episode, which was if the Strife X cost over $100 and was a flywheeler, a $60 Nerf Pro primary would have to be a Springer because of the cost difference. But it is now explicitly listed as a primary flywheeler for $60 in the Pro line. So I'm trying to figure out how do you get... I wonder if it is using a different, like a worse battery.
I was going to say it might be the battery, because I know that with the Strife X, the battery was a very expensive part of it, since it is actually a LiPo, and basically all the board inside of that battery compartment is the safety charging system to make sure that it, you know, cuts out so you don't overdrain the battery.
I mean, the safety charging system, the circuit board, that is not an expensive. I mean, well, no, okay, it, chips. That... No. You know what? Chips have been challenging lately, so maybe there is an expense there. But they also have those specially cast flywheels, which I imagine are part of the expense. I mean, I almost wonder if this $60 primary flywheeler is just, instead of a Pro Strife X, it's just like a Pro Strife.
Well, I wonder if it has a lower FPS rating, because if it's like you're saying with the Strife X, it's, you know, it was hitting, what was it, 150s out of the box, you know, and it had a whole, safe charging LiPo and all of that.
It could just be a cost cut Strife X.
Yeah, it like a tuned down Strife X or whatever. Maybe it's running a 2S LiPo as opposed to a 3S or whatever. I have no idea, because even the motors were larger, weren't they also like 180 motors?
They were 180 motors,
so maybe they're bumping them down to 130s. Maybe it's a smaller battery, maybe it's hitting lower FPS numbers, and they're making it sort of an entry pro level.
Because what else would it be? I mean, it could be a completely new design. Like I think that we as a hobby are sort of assuming, because they did a Pro Strife, that whatever is next has to be a Pro Rapid Strike or a Pro Long Shot or a Pro Hammer Shot or whatever.
Strife is sort of, Strife in itself has just kind of become almost just a its own like nomenclature of like, oh, it's just a Strife whatever, because it's a semi-auto, you know, tunable flywheeler that was, you know, kind of really made a huge thing, so everybody really just revolves around the Strife. I personally don't believe it's going to be a Strife. I believe it would be Strife-esque in nature, for the fact that it's probably going to be a mechanical, you know, single shot or a semi-auto, you know, setup. But
yeah,
because that would explain the cost. I wouldn't see a full auto setup in there or anything like that. Actually, what even was the Rapid Strike when it came out? Was it like in the $40s or $50 range? I don't even remember.
I don't know. They're $5 at the thrift store, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I don't know. But I mean, even then, that just shows you like a full auto, you know, system. Even the turbines, right? Like same thing. They're not that much cheaper than what this primary flywheeler or this you know, Pro flywheeler would be. So again,
right.
I don't know. That is a
Nerf,
complete
Nerf
change.
Pro Fortnite SM Mini SMG X.
I've already built one. It's fine.
I would say it makes me wonder if they might go the Dart Zone Mark III route, because you were talking about batteries earlier. Do you think it might be one of those, like, it can take batteries, but it also has an XC60 connector plug into it? Because that would bring down the cost, like you're saying, just by removing the LiPo out of it.
Yes, that makes sense. I don't know what to expect from Nerf anymore. I feel like Nerf has different lawyers who would consider that a risk they don't want to take. But maybe they're able to justify that by targeting it at a higher age group. Maybe they finally kind of crossed that barrier.
With Nerf ball especially, maybe that's part of the barrier they needed, was a pro level, maybe. Like where, because I mean, even the videos, there's no kids playing, it's all adults basically playing Nerf ball,
right?
Maybe that is,
well,
because
Dart Zone if they ever officially acknowledged the XD60 connector in the Mark III, it was quite a while after the blaster came out. It was never a listed feature. And like, there is a liability reason for that. They knew that people would find it immediately, but they could not state it as a feature on the blaster. Would Nerf ever put effort into putting something in? Again, we like Dart Zone has put a lot of effort into focusing on the hobby as a target market. On Nerf's scale of business, the hobby is not a relevant target market. We are simply not large enough. We do not have the buying power for Hasbro to actually care about us. And that's why, even though I think Nerf Ball is really cool and it has a lot in it that we can borrow and use, even just the game type itself, it's not targeted at us. It's targeted at people who are interested in athletics and sports and also remember Nerf blasters. And so I don't feel like they're at the point where they're ready to do something like that. That's like a hidden feature that just the hobby will get.
The only thing I could even say is just the creator. Obviously, we know that that two of the creators that were really paramount in the creation of the StrifeX are also people who are like members of the hobby as well.
Right.
So maybe this is their, maybe it's something again, like an attempt to like the StrifeX was a kind of a go with this. It's a safe bet for Hasbro. Put these things in there. Cause I mean, everything is basically a worker upgrade in on a Strife. And that's what the StrifeX kind of was. So maybe this one is maybe it's a new blaster. Maybe it's slightly smaller. Maybe because remember, they're just kind of reusing a little bit of the old shell for the Strife as it was. And, you know, that did add quite a lot of extra plastics. It's, you know, they were retooling old molds. Probably there could have been a lot of things that went in with that. Maybe this is now their actual, you know, entry of here's our budget pro line flywheeler that we were actually able to make, but we needed to get the StrifeX onto the market to kind of raise the hype over Nerf Ball or whatever. So maybe that's what it is. I don't know. I mean, that's the only thing I could even think of.
So there's also a $30 sidearm, pro sidearm, which
it's a pro jolt.
I mean, I feel like, you know, everybody's saying hammer shot. I feel like we're more likely to see a disruptory strong arm sort of thing.
I would be more inclined to see that.
We could put like maybe they get that thing to hit like 90 or 100 FPS, which is, you know, something that the hobby can do quite easily.
Well, I mean, even Dart Zone did it with the Blitzfire. That was 100, you know, basically 100 FPS out of the box. And it could take half darts too without modifications, right?
And that's the question. Like, do we think,
or not Blitz? Was it the Blitzfire?
I don't know. There's the little X shot thing that can take half darts. What were you saying, Boomstick? Sorry.
Sorry. Oh, you're fine. I was just saying, like, it makes me wonder, like, are they just going to be repurposing an existing one like they did with the Strife, or is this going to be something new? Because we've only seen one offering from the Pro line. It could go either direction. It could be a situation where they're repurposing an older design and giving it more power, or it could be something new. Like, it all depends on what we're speculating. Or
I really
have no idea. I have no idea what Nerf could be doing with these two offerings.
I'd like to know what each of you think, because I would honestly rather just see something new.
Absolutely.
To see something new personally. We have absolutely seen it though with Nerf specifically. There is always sort of a repackaging of similar stuff, so you know, for cost cutting reasons, maybe that's my only worry, is that it's going to be repackaged something, which a lot of people are going to jump to right away. I understand like that frustration, because I want something new as well, but for, you know, company that's trying to make money, that repackaging whatever they can get is always going to be more profitable.
Yeah.
But yeah, the flywheeler has me the most confused. The sidearm can be just a like you said, sort of a repackaged old blaster
It's gonna be some little Springer.
Yeah, yeah. It's because a lot of people said that with the darts that they're offering, they can't do a Springer, but at the same time, even with larger headed darts, like say waffle headed darts from Adventure Force, you can load those into Springers no problem if they're front load. And
well, they're also saying a mag fed Springer. I think it's just gonna be a little front load guy.
I feel that it's gonna be a front load. I because if it's mag fed, remember the darts are the AccuStrike darts, and the heads on those were fairly too large as it was, and yeah. They do drag heavily on the barrel, and that would just be killer for a pro line. But even if you do front load it, you can still get decent numbers, at least close to 100 with certain blasters and yep. very short barrel lengths. So that's why yep. I'm leaning to the same thing of a front loader. But you know,
all right. Well, we'll see. Meanwhile, they also have this N series. There's been so much confusion with the naming on all of these things because in the Target leaks that we got previously, every leak said N series at the beginning of it. But now there's a specific list of things that say N series. It's the Ward for $5, Agility for $10, $20 Pinpoint, $50 Infinite. People are going to say, oh, the Nerf Infinite is coming back. That is not that. No, there's almost no way that that's happening. Maybe they're bringing back like the mechanism or a similar mechanism, or they have some kind of reloading mechanism and they're calling back to that. They're not remaking the Nerf Infinite. There's like a 0% chance that that's the case. This to me screams just the new Elite 2.0. Like it's just a new normal toy line. There's so little information. I don't feel like Ward, Agility, Pinpoint, and Infinite gives us any sense of like, unless I'm missing something, I don't feel like that gives me any sense of like a vibe or like a theme for these blasters.
Actually, I was about to state it might be another AccuStrike line coming back because I was thinking of Pinpoint and stuff like that. The other ones, and I'm also in line with you on the Infinite is not going to be an Infinite reshell. The Infinite was $70 when it released. That is,
yeah, it would be so much more now.
Yeah, exactly. It would be way more for how complicated that thing is. I would see another Hyperfire, maybe something like that, because of the you know, maybe it's another a full auto, you know, flywheeler with that name, right. But again, it's kind of with the price tag that sounds about right, but the you know, everything else just it's kind of spitballing again.
Well, so here's the other thing, you know, there's this confusion with the names, and there were also briefly on the same website there were listings for the $60 primary flywheeler and the $30 sidearm that both said Gelfire, and Gelfire is technically under Nerf's Pro umbrella. Even though when we talk about pro blasters, we're trying to talk about the dart blasters, but theoretically for their thing, it's under the same grouping. Those were certainly errors. We're not like all of the gel automatic, the electric blasters or AEBs. The flywheels you would use to launch gel blasters are a very funny concept to me. That does not exist. There is a listing for a $35 Gelfire Uproar, and I'm kind of wondering if that's actually a typo and it's actually supposed to be an N series Uproar, because there is a gap in the pricing scheme between the $20 Pinpoint and the $50 Infinite that a $35 blaster would fit into perfectly.
I mean, it's possible. We have seen a lot of the copy pay, like, you know, pasta stuff on these sites when they're just trying to get listings,
yeah,
you know, started. So that, I mean, that could very well be true.
What we did get for sure from General Strife, and there was another screenshot that came in, and I don't 100% know where it came from, but it does seem legit. There is a hopper for a Gelfire Nightfall. And there's also 10,000 round packs of glow-in-the-dark gel rounds, gel fire rounds. So it's Nerf is clearly coming out with a whole glow-in-the-dark gel fire line, having just sued the pants off of Primetime Toys and like everybody else to try to force them to stop making gel. Meanwhile, stores are pulling gel bead products from the shelves, and some stores are even pulling gel fire products from their online marketplaces. I mean, what's going to happen here? Considering how bad Hasbro's financial situation is right now, I have a fear, honestly, that they're going to put so much money and resources into this Gelfire line, they're not going to be able to sell it, and like Nerf as a brand within Hasbro is going to take a hit from having this big financial burden of a bunch of product that they produce that they can't sell.
Yeah, because the issues with, I know a lot of the problems were like ingesting of the gel balls and obviously causing problems. Glow in the dark is also even more toxic. And if they're worried about, you know, people or kids or children or whatever, you know, ingesting it, this is even worse. It's like this could absolutely really backfire on them.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's not looking promising.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Between the laws and like states that are making it, you know, illegal to sell or own these items, like, or counties, I should say, not necessarily. Well, some states I think did do that when we were reporting on it, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. There was a bunch of it that, well, cause before we even had this gel bead stuff, you know, people were doing gel blaster drive-bys and mm-hmm. stuff, and certain states cracked down on them. A lot of that is still in place. There's places you can't ship gel blasters to without going through extra hoops, or at all. Which, like, I have no attachment to gel, but I don't want our hobby to get the tangentially, I'm wording this so badly. What am I trying to say? I don't want us to be caught in the aura of these problems.
It's almost guilty by association.
Yeah, exactly. It's
sort of the, yeah. And that is sort of the problem. Since they just, a lot of times, will bundle in anything that's, you know, gun looking as just part of that issue. And it's like, well, you know,
well, we saw that with all the CPSC rule change mm-hmm. stuff last year, and you know, there's a lack of understanding, I think, on how complex the play shooting sports are, and the layers that exist to that. I mean, do you Boomstick? You run a lot of events. Do you bump into issues with public perception and, you know, games that are running in public spaces? Do you ever actually bump into those kinds of problems?
No, but that is because all the games in Maryland are hosted on private property. Like the Maryland Nerf Herders plays at a church, Southern Maryland House of Nerf plays at fairgrounds, and DMV Nerfers plays in an indoor soccer arena. So none of us really have to deal with public perception. And the reason we all have to do that is because it's, at least in the county I live in, it's actually illegal to host Nerf Wars in public parks.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a legalistic thing to where, like, anything that propels an object through spraying or compressed air is classified as a weapon, which is why we can't have Nerf Wars at public parks, at least in my county. Down in Southern Maryland, they used to be able to, but then their events started getting too big, and they legally ran into issues where it's like they didn't have the facilities to be able to host an event of that size at a public park, but that's a separate issue. So unfortunately, the better people to ask, honestly, would be the UNO guys, United Nerf Ops, up in New Jersey and New York and technically Connecticut, they play in public parks still. Despite they do still play at a paintball arena, but they also still host games in public parks in both Long Island and New Jersey, and for those two I know for sure, and they've had run-ins with public perception and have had to have conversations with police officers and people and the like just because of that public perception, because people see adults running around with blaster-shaped objects, and most of the time they're not worried that they're guns, they're more worried that they're playing airsoft or paintball. That's usually people's bigger concern, is they're not worried about it because we don't look like we're running around shooting people with real guns. We look like we're playing.
Yeah.
But they're concerned about safety of other people. If we were using paintball or airsoft, that could cause damage to both people and to property as well. So from my experience in seeing games that are held at public parks and whatnot, the issue is more of the airsoft paintball perception, and gel ball looks even more like airsoft, and so it'll probably end up hitting that same kind of stigma that airsoft has, even though technically I believe gel ball is a lot safer than airsoft due to the ammo.
That makes sense. Has it ever impacted your relationships with any of your venues?
No, because they know what events we're hosting. They know we're hosting Nerf Wars. They know we use modified blasters. I've shown, the people who I run the people who own the property, I've shown them my modified blasters before. We've not run into any issues with them. We play out in a open field, so like we don't really have issues with, like buildings or people being nearby. No, it really doesn't affect us at all being on that, again, being on private property, which is a blessing for us. Like the fact that we're able to do that because not everybody has access to a private field that they can play on to avoid things like public perception and relationships with the people who own the property that you're playing on. Like that's a big headache that we are fortunate in not having to deal with. I can speak on the fact because I play at UMBC and they're playing on a college campus. Now the campus is aware that they play games, and so it's not unexpected to see them, but you still have to deal with working around people who are not playing the game and making sure that, you're not involving them in any way, making sure that you're not looking too threatening. Because especially with the climate of today, I'll call it, being on a college campus and everything, they have to be a lot more strict. Like, they constantly have to think about public perception and what blasters you can use, their colors, their silhouette. Like you could have a brightly colored blaster, but like that's the reason they don't allow the Dart Zone Mark II without its big orange muzzle on the front of it, even though it's red and orange. That silhouette, especially because we play games at night, it's not safe to run that, especially when we're playing at night. So that, I would say, is the biggest. And they take those precautions because they have to.
That makes sense. Well, you know, if gel ball flops, just hopefully it doesn't take us with it.
Yeah.
Because, we put so much, like you're saying, I feel like communication is so important, and taking appropriate precautions and really having conversations as you're setting rule sets is all so important, and I feel like our hobby on the whole does such a good job of that stuff. And I don't feel like gel ball has that kind of community and has those conversations going on in the same way. So I just hope that we don't get splash damage from what seems to be happening with the gel ball world. And speaking of failed products, we can segue through the Nerf dart sweeper, which I just saw one. I just saw one at a thrift store, and I looked at it and I went,
"It's so bad."
Well, there it is. And I almost wish I bought it, because then I got home and found out about the Shellington Labs dart sweeper, which just looks like such... It's funny because it really does just look like they looked at the Nerf one and went like, well, that's silly. It should work like this.
Yeah.
And then just built the same product correctly.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Have you played with one?
I have not, unfortunately. I haven't been able to get up to New Jersey in a while, and that's where he's been testing them out. But I have heard really good things about them from the people, from my friends who are up there talking about it. And from the sound of it, like, it does very well on indoor fields, which made me a little sad, because, like, it's really only indoor, because I play on an outside field for most of the time.
I mean, I don't think you're ever going to be able to make a product like this that does... Well,
it was a garden weasel.
Yeah, but we have that for Rival. You know, we have options. I mean, I walk around with the little squeezy, grippy things.
You got to get yourself
the main
big
thing I noticed
weasel.
About the. Yeah, right. Well, the main thing I noticed about the Shellington thing is it has the big, like an oversized, like vacuum style brush, which is ingenious. Like anything that fits in there, it's going to pick up. And that's impressive. Like that's a really great idea. And Shellington, of all people, considering the amount of like small, like half dart shells and stuff that they produce in products, has every reason to want to make it easier to pick those things up. But it got me thinking, and we always end the podcast with sort of a lighthearted round table question. If you could come up with a ridiculous and impractical dart sweeping solution, maybe to fill the gap for outdoors that the Shellington dart sweeper can't fill, what would it be? What would you invent that doesn't have to actually work, that is a ridiculous way to sweep up any and all of the ammo that you might encounter? I do immediately like the idea of a gigantic garden weasel. Maybe it's like one of those balls that you roll down a hill in, you know, like the
put somebody on the inside of it,
and you just roll, you just walk around and roll it around.
It's like the steel things from Gladiator.
yep,
it's just one of those.
Yep.
Well,
I'll tell you right off the bat. Oh no, you go first.
So me and one of my locals, Donut Cat. He and I share a love of Ryobi products, and we've been looking at the Ryobi leaf vac and taking the blade off of it to like allow it to like suck up the darts without shredding them up. It's like we've been looking at it, like we've not pulled the trigger on anything, but we've been talking. We've got ideas.
All right.
Damn it.
Was that yours?
My idea. I literally have a Ryobi leaf blower, and I've been looking at this question for like the past 20 minutes, and I'm like, oh, I got a good one. I know exactly what I'm going to do. Boomstick and Donut Cat out of nowhere already had the same freaking idea. I've been teasing it, and I'm like, oh. That was my first thing, and I was thinking of like, you know, you could put a little sifter in there that makes sure that it can still pull debris through, but it's you know, small enough that the darts will get caught. And if you have a cutout on the bottom, eventually they can start to make their way down. Cause if you get enough darts, if you let go of the trigger, they'll just fall into like a dump pouch, and you can, you know, like, I'm just, you know, gotta, just thinking all of this up.
You got to combine it with the, Paper Skeletons 3D, dart sifter. And combine it into that.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah,
it sorts the darts while it's vacuuming it up.
Yeah, just it'll sift them all, and then you just have little four individual dump pouches that just separate everything as you need it. It's perfect. This idea is flawless.
You know, the Lego community is slightly ahead of you, because people who do those big builds that are like, you see people do a build that's like a big boat and they make like a giant tray and they just fill it with the single stud clear blue pieces to make water. People have like handheld vacuum cleaners that they never put dirt in. It's just dedicated to picking up all of those Lego, all the loose Lego in those things.
Yep.
That's all they ever use it for.
Yeah. They got it hooked up to a shop vac, and they've got like a whole bunch of different levels that catch the Legos at different.
There you go.
Different sets. I've actually seen somebody, well, not in person, but I've seen online people's Lego vacuum builds that also sort the Legos while you vacuum them up. It's very cool.
That's sweet. Well, my idea though, is a dart sweep Zamboni.
Just like a golf cart, but it's like a, yep. But it's a full Zamboni.
It's well, I mean, what they make those, don't the golf carts, they make those like golf ball pickup
they do.
Things yeah, that they do around.
They do.
So we got to start with that. And, you know, just size down the pickup thing so that it's picking up, you know, softer, smaller objects. And
I'm
get
on
driving.
Board. I mean, I'm on board for that.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
Yeah. I mean, it's essentially just a giant garden weasel that you ride on.
Yep.
It's true.
we have returned.
You could even, it's in a cage. What's even better, it's fully encased to protect the driver. You could be dart sweeping in the middle of a game.
Yeah, see?
You become a target for everyone.
See, that's the kind of dart sweeping that people will want to do.
Exactly. Like, everybody be clamoring to
Mom said it's my turn on the dart sweep.
Perfect. I love it.
And that's the podcast title.
I love it.
Write that down. Anyway. Anyway. So great. We've solved all the problems. Zamboni, get in touch for licensing this idea. We look forward to your email.
Patent pending.
Zamboni apparently is like still, I think, like a family-owned company, and they're like really? The only ones, yeah, that make ice resurfacers.
Huh.
And I know somebody that drives one. I've even commissioned him for art.
I wanted to be someone who drove one. Actually, did not come through. The Zamboni story. After wait, da 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 da. Yeah. Considered Frank J. Zamboni might be considered. Da 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 da. Yeah, he like tinkered with cars, started an electrical service industry, installed refrigerators, and then. Papa Rink still operates. It's unusual. This does not actually explain. No. This is, never mind. Forget it. This is four pages. We're ending this podcast. Anyway, so point is, yeah, it's still like one dude. Zamboni is like one dude. I think he's still alive. Anyway.
Man, we had a question that popped up after we had started.
That means he can call us about our dart sweeping idea. That is what's going on here. Boomstick, thank you so much for joining us on not just this podcast, but on the show itself. It's been really a pleasure having you here. Will you please tell the good folks where they can find you on this wide internet of ours?
Yes, you can find me as Boomstick Mods pretty much everywhere. You can find me Boomstick Mods on Facebook, Boomstick Mods on YouTube, Boomstick _Mods on Instagram. I technically have a TikTok, but I don't do much with it. But it is there.
Yep. Mood. Fabulous. We will link to some subsection of those things down below, whatever you're enjoying this on. Vile, what's the news? Anything special? Anything new going on? Viola's probably streaming right now as you listen to this.
It's true. I am definitely streaming, and I'm wouldn't you know it, I'm doing an integration. Crazy.
Imagine that. I'm probably playing my birthday show as you listen to this. I'm taking a break from music streaming this month, but I'll be back. I started two new jobs, so my time scale is a little bit different right now.
Busy. KT is very, very busy.
Now I'm the working man on the podcast. It is what it is.
Oh, man.
Anyway. What?
I was going to say, oh, man, I fit in really well with everybody else then. I'm a stay-at-home dad, so it's like...
Oh, yeah.
You just join everybody else.
I enjoy that. I miss... I was a stay-at-home dad for a while. I miss it.
I'm a stay-at-home husband. I get it.
Yeah, living that life. He's a kept man.
Right.
Worst things to be. All right. We casted a pod. Thank you, everybody. Have a great night.
Bye.